This is the Sunday Catholic Word, a production of Catholic Answers, the only podcast to look at the Sunday Mass readings from an apologetics perspective.
Hey everyone, welcome back to the Sunday Catholic Word, a podcast where we reflect on the upcoming Sunday Mass readings and pick out the details that are relevant for explaining and defending our Catholic faith. I'm Dr. Carlo Broussard, staff apologist and speaker for Catholic Answers, and the host for this podcast. In today's episode, we're going to focus on several details found in all three readings for this upcoming 29th Sunday of Ordinary Time, Year B. And all the details converge together on a single apologetical theme, the nature of Jesus' atoning sacrifice. So let's start with the first reading, taken from Isaiah chapter 53, verses 10 through 11. There, Isaiah the prophet says, "The Lord was pleased to crush him in infirmity. If he gives his life as an offering for sin, he shall see his descendants in a long life, and the will of the Lord shall be accomplished through him. Because of his affliction, he shall see the light in fullness of days. Through his suffering, my servant shall justify many, and their guilt he shall bear." Christians see in this passage a prophecy of the atoning sacrifice of Jesus. For some, however, they view it through a lens that leads them to conclude that Jesus was punished by the Father in our place, thereby setting us free from the punishment owed to us as a human race. This view is common among Protestants of the Reformed tradition and is called penal substitutionary atonement. There are a couple of details in our first reading here that some see as supporting this view of Christ's atoning sacrifice. The first is the phrase, "The Lord was pleased to crush him in infirmity." The other is the statement that the suffering servant would, quote-unquote, bear the guilt of the many that he justifies through his suffering. If the Father is viewed as the active agent in inflicting suffering on Jesus, so it's sometimes argued, and it states that Jesus bears the guilt of those he sets free, well then, the Father is, quote-unquote, punishing Jesus in our stead. So the question is, does this text support penal substitutionary atonement? I don't think so. Take the first detail, for example. That Isaiah speaks of God crushing the suffering servant in infirmity doesn't necessarily mean the Father is the active agent of inflicting such suffering. On the level of prophecy, this would refer to the Romans crucifying Jesus. To read this text through the lens of penal substitutionary atonement, we'd have to say the Father is actively or positively causing, rather than permitting, the Romans to kill Jesus. But that can't be, since that would entail God the Father directly causing the Roman soldiers to kill an innocent human being without divine approval, which is sinful. Now, this line of reasoning assumes that God can't cause humans to sin, an assumption that some Christians might challenge. And for a defense of this belief, check out my article at Catholic.com, "God Does Not Cause Us to Sin." There, I argue that it's metaphysically impossible for God to actively cause us to sin, since that would entail God not loving himself, which is metaphysically impossible. And if that's the case, well then we can't read this text as evidence for God actively causing the Romans to kill Jesus, as the penal substitutionary atonement view would entail. The question now becomes, well, what do we make of this statement from Isaiah about God crushing his servant? The attribution of direct causality to God can be explained by the common practice of ancient authors ascribing every effect to the direct causality of God because they believed everything falls under God's providence. For example, the Bible speaks of God hardening Pharaoh's heart. We know God didn't directly cause this effect, since that would entail God causing Pharaoh to sin. Rather, God permits Pharaoh to remain in his sin, and that in turn leads to the hardening of his heart. Since this permission was part and parcel of the divine plan, the ancient author ascribes the effect directly to God without specifying the metaphysical distinction between God's positively causal activity and him positively causing an effect and permitting an effect. Similarly, Isaiah can speak of God positively, quote-unquote, crushing the suffering servant, and on the prophetical level, Jesus, because the suffering that would be inflicted on Jesus is willed to be permitted from all eternity, and thereby is part and parcel of the divine plan. Concerning the Lord being pleased with such suffering, this doesn't necessarily mean that God takes delight in the suffering as an end. Rather, it simply means, again, that the permitted suffering of Jesus is part of the divine plan of redemption. In that sense, it's pleasing to God, because the permitted suffering manifests his divine goodness, particularly his divine goodness considered as mercy, insofar as he orders the permitted evil of Jesus' passion and death to the redemption of the human race and our individual salvation. Okay, well, what about the other detail at the end of the reading, where it speaks of the suffering servant Jesus bearing the guilt of the many, whom he justifies through his suffering? Doesn't this prove Jesus was punished in our stead? No, it doesn't. First, we know Jesus couldn't have literally bore the guilt of sinners in the sense of being a sinner, since the author of Hebrews in Hebrews 4:15, which is part of the second reading for this upcoming Sunday Mass, teaches us that Jesus is without sin. He writes, quote, "For we have not a high priest who is unable to sympathize with our weaknesses, but one who in every respect has been tempted as we are, yet without sinning," close quote. Moreover, Jesus couldn't have literally bore the guilt of sinners in the sense of being punished for sinners, for that would entail Jesus having to undergo the full punishment for sin, which is not only death, but damnation. But surely Jesus can't be subject to or experience damnation on our behalf. If that were so, then Jesus' human will would be opposed to the divine will. For the essence of damnation is for the will of the damned to be definitively opposed to the divine will. But Jesus' human will can't be opposed to the divine will, since Hebrews 4:15 tells us Jesus was without sin. Therefore, Jesus can't bear our guilt in the sense of being subject to or experiencing damnation on our behalf. And if that's the case, well then Jesus couldn't have literally bore our guilt as sinners. Jesus also can't literally bear our guilt in the sense of being punished with death in our stead. That would make the Father the active agent in the bestowal of punishment, which in turn means the Father would be actively punishing an innocent human being. But to inflict suffering upon an innocent human being as punishment is unjust, which is contrary to the Father's goodness. Therefore, the death that Jesus endures can't be a penal effect that the Father actively bestows, which is just another way of saying that Jesus' atoning sacrifice is not penal substitution. So, if the language of the bearing of our guilt doesn't mean penal substitution, then what does it mean? It's a poetic way of describing Jesus' atoning sacrifice as vicarious atonement, which involves substitution, but just not penal. Consider that the human race had a debt of punishment, both death, temporary punishment, and damnation, eternal punishment. And the scriptures clearly speak of Jesus' death as paying off that debt in our stead. The debt of eternal punishment for the human race, taken care of immediately, and the debt of death promised to be taken care of at the end of time. The gospel reading for this upcoming Sunday Mass, taken from Mark 10:35 through 45, says as much. Jesus says there in Mark 10:45, "For the Son of Man didn't come to be served, but to serve, and to give his life as a ransom for many." But Jesus is paying off our debt through his death doesn't necessarily mean Jesus' death is an effect of the Father actively punishing him. Death has the character of punishment for us, who are guilty of personal sin, and of course guilty of original sin, having the guilt of original sin, or at least an aspect of it, even after baptism. Jesus' death, on the other hand, is a voluntary act of sacrificial love that he intentionally orders or directs to remitting our debt. He wills his death specifically to be the cause of freeing us from our debt, rather than something else, like a single drop of blood or the simple willing of God. There is nothing in this logic that demands Jesus' death to be penal in nature. On this view, however, Jesus does substitute for us in a sense. He substitutes his death for our death as the means of remitting our debt of punishment. But that substitutionary death doesn't have to be the enduring of punishment any more than a wealthy friend who substitutes his money for mine to pay off my financial penalties to creditors would be a bearing of punishment. My friend would simply be directing the use of his money out of love to remit my debt on my behalf. On the other hand, if I were to use my money to pay off such financial penalties, then it would take on a penal character. Similarly, Jesus, out of love, wills his death to be the means by which he remits our debt of punishment. Again, no penal character is necessary on this view. The penal character only would be present if we undergo the death for the remission of the debt, which we do when we die the death of nature on account of original sin. So in the end, we can conclude that Isaiah's prophecy in this first reading for this upcoming 29th Sunday of Ordinary Time does not provide biblical justification for the penal substitutionary theory of Jesus' atoning sacrifice. Well, my friends, that brings us to the end of this episode of the Sunday Catholic Word. The readings for this upcoming 29th Sunday of Ordinary Time, Year B, provides us great material, apologetical material, to reflect on Jesus' atoning sacrifice and the nature thereof. As always, thank you for subscribing to the podcast, and please be sure to tell your friends about it, and invite them to subscribe as well at SundayCatholicWord.com. You might also want to check out the other great podcasts in our Catholic Answers Podcast Network: Trent Horn's The Council of Trent, Joe Heschmeyer's Shameless Popery, Jimmy Akin's A Daily Defense, and Tim Staples' 101 with Tim, and even Jimmy Akin's podcast, new podcast. I think it's called Jimmy Akin's Podcast, The Mysteries of Faith at Catholic.com. And all the others can be subscribed to and found at Catholic.com. One last thing. If you're interested in getting some cool mugs and stickers with my logo, Mr. Sunday Podcast, go to shop.catholic.com. Friends, I hope you have a blessed 29th Sunday of Ordinary Time, Year B. Until next time, God bless.
Thank you for listening to the Sunday Catholic Word. Find more great shows by visiting CatholicAnswersPodcasts.com or just search for Catholic Answers wherever you listen to podcasts.